views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you awaken to your inner strength and vibrancy so that you can live life to its fullest potential, and by doing so, help the whole planet shift to a more peaceful and loving way of being. Today, I want to talk about a very important skill set that can help you excel in many areas of life, including, but definitely not limited to, being a parent. Sometimes I find people have difficulty recognizing that the same skills they use at work or as a volunteer or even to calm down an upset best friend can also be used with their kids. The reverse is true as well. The skills that you learn in order to be a better parent can help you with your colleagues, employees, neighbors, and friends. Now, of course, it's going to work best for all involved if you use level-appropriate language. So that's like age-appropriate, but we're talking about their maturity level. The main idea, however, remains the same. So today I'm going to share how you can use the same skills that will help you excel as a boss or leader to be a wonderful parent. Because let's face it, life is already busy enough without having to develop separate skill sets for everything that we do. Now, just to be clear, you might not be a boss, or you might not be involved in raising kids right now. However, the topic I'm covering can help you in all of your relationships. So what we're talking about today can help you land that promotion at work. It can help you get along better with the people you volunteer with. It can help you create a solid foundation with your loved ones, whether kids are in the picture or not. And it can certainly help you to be a wonderful parent. On top of that, these skills can also ease your to-do list, decrease stress, and allow you to multipurpose in areas that you might have previously overlooked. Sound good? Awesome. I'm assuming you're saying yes, so let's get to it. Since most of us are familiar with bosses or leaders of some sort, I like to use them as a way to help you zero in on the kinds of qualities that, to you, make a person great. These might be people that you know personally, but they could also be from a TV show, a movie, or a book. They might even be a blend of several people that you know. Whatever the case, if we focus on the qualities that separate an ordinary boss from a really great boss, and then apply them to our own communication strategies, we access some really valuable insider information about how we can excel in life. And if we want it, we can use it to guide us as to which skills we want to expand on next. Anyone can boss other people around, but not everyone will be a great boss. So let's figure out what makes a great boss great in your eyes, and then use that information to expand your own skills. So let's start by thinking about that really great boss. Now, understand this is just someone who you admire who's in a leader position. So they could be a boss, they could be a coach, a teacher, a club member, a team leader. It's just important that there's someone who is in a position of authority over you in some way and that they inspire you to put your best foot forwards. Ask yourself, what did you admire about him or her? How did they motivate you? How did they make you feel heard, cared for, inspired, loyal? If you like, you can grab a pen and paper and jot down some of your ideas, or for now, just think about it and see what comes up. Now, chances are that although they were great, they probably weren't perfect if they were, in fact, a real person. So you might find that some of their faults keep coming up, and that's okay. Write those down too, just in a different list, because we can use those things to help us create qualities we wish they would have had. In fact, if you can't even think of a boss or leader that you've admired, no worries. As humans, we are wired to retain the negative more easily than the positive. So don't fight it. Instead, just start your list with the things that you don't like. All right, so now you have a list. If you have a great leader in mind, focus on that list. Write down as many things they did that you admired about them that helped to bring out the best in you that you can think of. Then, if there were some things they did that you didn't care for, jot them down in a separate list. Now, I've had a couple of really wonderful bosses. So focusing in on one, I was able to jot down that she laughed often. I like that about her. She would even laugh at herself when warranted. She took responsibility for her actions. She admitted when she didn't know things. She had my back when needed. She gave compliments out freely, but you still had to earn them. Those are all things that were important to me. Now, I also had several less than stellar bosses. One would say one thing and then apparently forget what he'd said and then tell me I was wrong when I was just doing what he had told me I should do. So from him, I started my negative list and I wrote down that he was unreliable. Then in the good quality column, I could put reliable, means what they say, communicates clearly, takes responsibility for their own mistakes. Another boss I had was fresh out of university, and he lacked confidence, which he tried to hide under false bravado. Now, I had already been working in my job for a few years, and I had become a star employee. So I actually did know a lot about the ins and outs of the specific branch of the bank where we worked. So he had the book smarts, you know, the university that had trained him to run the branch. But I had the front line in the trenches work experience in my corner. Now, I'm guessing that several of you listening to this will be able to relate to how frustrating it is to have to take orders from someone who you know knows less than you do about some specific things. So hopefully your understanding of why I might have been a bit hard on him when he arrived. But getting back to the exercise, I discovered that I hated when he would contradict me in front of someone that I was training. And so when I thought about this and I take it a step further, I realized that he made me feel unsafe to admit that I didn't know something. He also made me feel unsafe to ask questions. I was also really irritated by how when he was wrong, he would often try to pretend that he was joking. Well, you didn't take me seriously, did you? I was just kidding. And so this made me not trust him. So from my experience with him, I could write down things like, I don't like when they're condescending, when they lie, right? Say that they were just joking when in fact they were wrong. I don't like when they can't admit they're wrong. If they're rude, if they lack confidence, if they're ego-driven, if they're untrustworthy. So then I think about what he'd have to change to be a really great boss. And I can write down he'd be confident, helpful, patient, provide clear explanations, admit when he's wrong, be trustworthy. In other words, he has my back. He asks for help when he doesn't know things. He recognizes effort and ability. Now, some of these things are already on my list from my great boss. I don't have to rewrite them there. It's just recognizing that these things are definitely important to me. They've come up more than once. Okay? So write down what comes to mind when you think about what makes a great leader, and then use what you didn't like to further flesh out your list. Now, if you're dealing with a bad boss right off the hop and you still feel angry with them or resentful, be careful not to let those emotions cloud your ability to see great qualities. Now, once I have my great qualities list, I can take these categories and think about how much I might use them in all of my relationships, especially in any that I'm currently struggling with. I've mentioned before that people are often mirrors for us to see where growth is needed in our own lives, but this only works if we recognize the mirroring and figure out how to use it rather than just getting mad at that person and plotting ways to take them down. So I've created a list of 10 qualities that I think are important for a great boss to have, and I want to show you how you can apply those same skills to other areas of your life, especially in relationships where you have authority over another person, as is definitely the case in parenting. Now, a couple quick things to keep in mind, though. First of all, the qualities that stand out for you reflect your values. So feel free to use your own list to decide where you will focus your attention. The second thing is that the areas I'm highlighting are foundational skills. So if any of them feel foreign to you or feel like they're beyond your current ability, it really would be a great idea to explore them further. So here's the 10 qualities. Number one, patient with good self-control. A great boss is predictable in that he stays calm and controlled despite a challenging situation. So he does not allow his emotions to determine his reaction, but instead uses them to guide him towards what needs to happen. So we've talked a lot about these kinds of things on the Vibrant Powerful Mom show. But just as examples, there's knowing how to put your higher self in charge, using the gap to choose your response, learning how to shift your perspective on things, noticing your body cues and triggers, having great communication tools, and so on. So patience and self-control are skills that you want to practice often in every area of your life, especially when it comes to parenting. Unfortunately, they are also two things that we often run out of with our kids. Why? Because they push our buttons, because these kinds of reactions have been modeled for us when we look at our family of origin, because of our limiting beliefs, and even because of the fact that we take our social face off when we get out of the public's eye. So think for a moment about what it might be like to work for a boss who is unpredictable in his response to things, who flies off the handle when pressed, or who has no patience when it comes to showing you what you need to succeed at work. If you've ever experienced this in your life, you know it's not fun, and it's really hard to be the best you can be when you're walking on eggshells. The second thing a great boss will have is clear expectations. Expectations are not a guessing game when you have a great boss. This type of leader will be clear on what she expects, when it needs to be done by, and who she expects to do it. With your kids, this might translate into saying something like, "Susie, the table needs to be cleared before you go outside." In your volunteer position, it might mean asking questions such as, just to be clear, you're asking all of us to have this form back to you by Monday, right? And with your significant other, it would mean having plenty of conversations, you know, those real deep heart-to-hearts about what's really important to you. Other people cannot meet your expectations if you don't know them yourself and if you don't share them. Number three, acknowledges a job well done. We all like to hear when we've done a good job and especially appreciate being told what we did well. A great boss does this often. Now, remember my boss who was fresh out of university? Our relationship probably would have been very different if he had acknowledged that I knew some of the processes better than he did and actually asked me to help him understand it. He also might have got a lot more compliance out of me by complimenting me once in a while. Now, of course, I might have brought out a different side of him by not allowing my ego to run the show and by using some of these skills with him as well. So when I look back, he was definitely being a mirror for me. So notice when people do a good job at something, or even if they just put in a really great effort, and acknowledge it. be as specific as you can so they know what you liked and why you liked it. An example might be, thanks for putting away your toys. The room looks so much nicer when things are put away. Number four, cares about the individual. For a boss, this means knowing a bit about the employee's life outside of work, birthdays, weekend plans, sick children, and so on. It also means checking in during stressful times. So recognizing when their workload might be really heavy or a deadline might be really stressing them out, maybe acknowledging things that might be vying for their attention, and then asking if they need some support during these times. This one can be really tricky, though, because so many of us have learned how to be enablers. This means that we often will see a person as weak or unable to handle things. So we come at it from a place of sympathy instead of empathy. And this will not ever bring out the best in another person. Caring is not the same as saving, doing for, taking over when things get tough, or even worrying about the other person. A lot of us have been taught to think that if you don't worry about someone, you don't care about them. It's also not about diving in the moment someone is feeling uncomfortable, or about interrogating them, ignoring privacy boundaries, or trying to stop them from making a mistake. Caring is about seeing the real person beneath the labels they've been given and recognizing that as humans, we need that connection and sense of belonging to really thrive in life. We need people to believe in us, accept us for who we are, try to understand our point of view, and allow us to live our journey as it unfolds. Number five, teaches, then trusts. This ties in closely with the idea that we just discussed. A great boss will show you a new task, allow you to try it, make sure you understand it, and then trust you to do the job. With our children, this training is often overlooked in an effort to get things done efficiently. In truth, this can happen with the new guy at work, the volunteer who's supposed to be taking over from you in just 2 weeks' time, even your partner when they try to help you out with a task that you've always looked after before. To really learn something, most of us benefit by having it broken down in steps, by being given an opportunity to try it out hands-on, and by slight positive adjustments being made when things go wrong. A great boss wouldn't assume that you know the details just from watching, and she certainly wouldn't take over the moment you show any difficulty with the task. Number six, provides assertive correction. A great boss will calmly yet clearly tell you when there is a problem with something you've done, complete with an explanation of why this is a problem. This boss will not accept excuses or shirking of responsibility, but is willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. So they aren't going to demand that you explain why you screwed up. Why did you do that? They're going to ask questions to figure out what went wrong and determine what kind of support you need to make sure it doesn't happen in the future. A great boss believes in you and recognizes mistakes are an inevitable part of life. Paying attention to how you correct your kids, the new guy, or your spouse can really make the difference between them seeing it as a valuable learning experience or an epic fail. Number seven, role models desired behaviors. A great boss does not say one thing and do another unless he's very clear about his reasons for this discrepancy. It's critical we remember our kids learn far more from what we do than what we say. And the rest of the world doesn't really have a lot of tolerance for hypocrites either. So as much as possible, you want your behavior to match the values you believe are important. And that's what you want to be modeling. So be the model that others can follow. Number eight, promotes independence and interdependence. A great boss allows employees to be individuals within the boundaries of company standards. She doesn't try to make clones of herself, but recognizes the unique talents each person brings to the table. She also expects people to work together for the good of the company. While our kids might seem to be a lot like us, they are individuals, and they will benefit most when we recognize and support that. If we allow people, such as our child, the new guy at work, or the volunteer in line to replace us, to be their own unique self while working towards a common set of goals, we will have a much stronger and happier team. Number 9, avoids micromanaging. A great boss gives us a task, ensures we understand the details and timeline, and then allows us to do it. Now, this one ties in tightly with two of the other ideas that we've already talked about, but it's still a little bit different. When we want family members to do things, we often ask or tell them, then we wait a moment, and then we nag at them to do as they're asked. This garbage is really full. Could you take it outside? Did you hear me? Are you going to take it outside? Well, when are you going to take it out? Now, besides being irritating, it also tells them that they do not need to do what we ask until our level of nagging hits a certain octave. This makes our life much more difficult than it needs to be. Now, even worse, if you nag at home, you are much more likely to lose it when colleagues, volunteers, or others don't respond immediately to your request, because that nagging is still going on. It's just going on in your head. So this causes a spike in cortisol, negative thinking, blood pressure. It can have all kinds of health ramifications if you hold it in, and relationship ramifications if you let it out. So the consequences are not good either way. I often like to use the analogy for nagging of a person in a restaurant ordering food and then following the waiter around, making sure and asking them, did you get what I said? Are you sure that you're going to not put any butter on the peas and corn? And then hovering over the chef to make sure that your order is done right. If you're going to do that, you might as well make your own meal at home. Micromanaging is not good for you or your relationships. So it's best for all involved to notice any nagging habits that you might have and start working on eliminating them. Number 10, promotes mutual respect. A great boss promotes a respectful relationship by treating her employees with respect. Orders are given sparingly and without personal attack. Ordering others around might seem more efficient, but in the end, especially with our children, it causes a lot of extra work. So watch the tone of voice you use with others and strive to get rid of any condescension. Eye rolling, sarcasm, and criticism are best used sparingly or not at all. Be very careful with cop-out lines like, oh, I was just teasing, I was only joking, when in fact, you were taking a jab at them. Allow choices when possible and accept what is chosen. There are innumerable ways to get things done, so being stuck on your own way as being the only way is limited thinking. Giving unsolicited advice and problem fixing are two other habits that many of us have fallen into that also often feels disrespectful, especially when you don't really listen to the problem in the first place. So let people ask for your insight or check it out first. Would you like to hear my opinion on that? Or I have an idea you might try. Want to hear it? Rather than ordering others to do things, ask or suggest when possible. With kids especially, use this as a teachable moment. So instead of saying, Sarah, come and set the table. Supper's almost ready. You could try, supper will be ready in 5 minutes. Sarah, is it your turn to set the table? Or if you don't like setting yourself up with that kind of question, you could say, supper's almost ready, Sarah, you're up. One of the biggest benefits of this, which you always want to keep in mind, is that asking or suggesting first gives you room to move before turning it into a disciplinary action. Interestingly, when you focus on building mutual respect with others, you will find the need for correction, fixing, and even ordering people around goes way down. So there you have it. 10 things you can practice that will help you be a great boss, a great neighbor, a great colleague, a great board member, and a great parent. Our children really are the bosses of the future. If we can keep these qualities in mind and practice them in our family environment, we will be creating a home environment that is fun to be part of and raising future leaders destined for greatness. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.